friends. Welcome to In the Garden. It's the gardening program courtesy of Master Gardener Ed Bajarski in Juneau. He calls in and offers up a great deal of highly valuable, very useful advice to us Southeast gardeners. And we want to say thanks to the Flower Farm for supporting this program too. They are busting out with dahlias and colorful cut flowers that can brighten your day. They have subscriptions available for yourself or as a special gift, plus annuals, perennials, trees, shrubs, dirt, mulching bark. And you're welcome to pop down to their greenhouses at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing, to check out the flowers. They're open every day but Wednesday, 772-3464. But it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. And a reminder to listeners that if you'd like to put a question to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, you can do so by calling 772-3808 during the show. And with that, we'll join Ed. He's here on the phone from Juneau. Ed, howdy doody.
Well, hi there, Oren. Another moist and kind of a gray day here, in spite of what the weather wizards were saying that should be happening. Maybe next week.
Maybe next week.
The sun will reappear.
Yeah, let's hope so. Gosh. It's been similar down here, too. Pretty dreary.
Yeah, I mean, some stuff is growing fine, and certainly the weeds, the slugs like it, and the ducks like it. And the unfortunately, I thought we'd talk a bit about some of the invasive weeds that we have in Southeast Alaska. We can even mention a few that are across Alaska, because there is a pamphlet, actually there's a couple of them, on invasive plants and pests in Alaska, put out by the Cooperative Extension Service. It is available online. It could be downloaded to your smartphone, you know, so you can carry it around with you. It has kind of a pocket guide, the paper version, that has pictures in it for identification. And that's kind of a handy item to have if you're out there. And some of these, we can kind of talk about, some of these are a problem, you know, in large areas of Southeast Alaska, that, and some are maybe more of a problem in small areas like our gardens. And unfortunately, some of these invasive plants that are on the list are some that are even sometimes sold by nurseries, or used to be sold until we found out how invasive they can be, such as foxgloves, bishop's weed, which is some folks like and some people curse. I'm in the latter group because it came with our house, and we're still fighting it 25 years later.
Wow.
Some of the others, Irish moss, again, is sold in nurseries as a very short, tidy ground cover, and it can also become very weedy. Again, that's an issue in some people's gardens. Sweet rocket, James rocket, was often included in seed wildflower seed mixtures along with the oxeye daisy, and most all of these have become very comfortable in Southeast Alaska and other parts of Alaska too, so that they are listed as being invasives. And there's other stuff too that can become invasives, plus there's some of the others that we see around us: Japanese knotweed, reed canary grass, and one item that's kind of, you know, in getting more attention, the orange hawkweed, that again, there some of these things are flowering right now. Some of them are very pretty flowers, but, again, they can cause some problems, certainly as they get into our gardens, and even along the roadsides, ditches, wetlands, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and some of these are just so persistent. Knotweed, hawkweed, those are hard plants to overpower.
They are, and, again, depending on their, you know, their method of reproduction, Now, the only, I suppose, a minor advantage of Japanese knotweed is that it is generally sterile, does not have viable seeds. But on the other hand, the roots that they have are just about as good as seeds, in that if you try to dig this stuff up, you dare do not, whatever you do, do not rototill a patch of this stuff, because very tiny bits of roots can and will resprout.
Right.
And that applies also to the bishop's weed, which is the variegated, it's a green and white variegated ground cover, sold as a ground cover, grows up to, 8 inches to a foot tall and has small clusters of white flowers. And again, for some areas that, as long as you don't, and think about this ahead before you plant it, you know, if you don't ever want to plant anything else there again, fine, go ahead and plant this. But this is just what you think is a temporary solution to a difficult area to grow stuff in, avoid planting it.
And that's bishop's weed.
Yes. That one, I don't know that one seeds itself, but again, it spreads easily by bits and pieces of roots. Like I was saying, that's one that came with our house, our, you know, little garden in front of the house, and we're still fighting it. And you've got to be careful, too. Watch for it if you are getting plants from somebody else, potentially, too, that you might get little bits and pieces of those. So again, think about that when you buy plants, when you share plants from your own garden, if you have, or if I have, some of these, you know, pests in our garden that we're not sharing them with others, and there's some other flowers, even a few of the primroses can seed themselves so vigorously as to become weeds. So again, that's, you know, a couple of weeks back we were talking about deadheading, so we're trying to remove the flower heads so they don't seed themselves all over the place. That's worthwhile. The orange hawkweed, again, is something that's become very common along highways. Certainly in Juneau, it's all over the place. Up in Haines, it's all over the place, and other places. I mean, I remember growing up with it back in Upper Michigan. And that's one that grows, again, maybe a foot tall, has quite nice red-orange flowers with a black base. I mean, it's quite attractive in a mass. And it, you know, from being a small, maybe a start, and it can become a mass fairly quickly.
And so that's one where if people are seeing that in their gardens or anywhere where they want to,
it can be. Oh yeah,
it.
And a lot of times if it's growing a lawn also, and sometimes you may see the odd few flowers depending on how much mowing you do. You know, if you don't mow for a few weeks, all of a sudden you're surprised by these nice red-orange flowers in your yard. And where did they come from? Well, they don't need to flower to survive because, again, they propagate both ways, both by seed and by underground roots and rhizomes. So it's, you know, somewhat more of a problem. So how do we how do we combat this stuff?
Yes.
You know, that's the obvious question. And out there in the wild, along the highway and stuff, there are places, at least around Juneau and other places, where, you know, the city or the state is actually actively trying to control it along the roadsides. Some places where they'll use this heavy-duty woven black fabric. I'm sure you've seen stuff that they use in road building, among other things. And they'll actually cover, if it's a discrete patch, and very often it starts out that way at least, try to cover the whole patch with this black fabric, weight down the edges, tack down the edges, attach it so it doesn't blow away or get disturbed, and leave it there for several years, potentially, so that the plant and at least the roots are, you know, die because they don't see the light. And this is one of the methods for control of the Japanese knotweed also, that you cut it down to the base, cut it down flush with the ground, and cover up and keep it covered. That one may be 3 or 4 years. And I know I saw there's a place here at the university where they did exactly that. This is in a sizable piece of property. And this is probably a 75 by 200 feet area, I mean the size of a full city lot or more,
wow,
that was covered with black fabric and stayed on there for at least 5 years.
Wow.
Occasionally you would see a sprout where there was a little hole. it would find the light, you know, it would find a hole and pop up.
Yeah.
And they'd go after it there. But that it, and then just this year they took, uncovered it after some 5 years or so, and there's really a, there is minimal, they've seeded the area since with a grass seed mixture.
Hmm.
And there is very little of this, the Japanese knotweed left in that area.
Huh.
So it can be controlled with some pretty serious effort.
Right.
Of course, you got to think if you've got it in your yard, you know, if you've got a small patch of it, that's maybe not so bad. You can cover it over.
Yeah.
But again, it needs to be, you have to be very diligent about this. If it starts to creep out, sneak out around the edges, you need to go after it and not let it do that. It can be controlled with glyphosate, which is the herbicide, the active ingredient in Roundup.
Hmm.
And some, you know, Japanese knotweed is sometimes called Alaska bamboo because it does have hollow stems.
Hmm.
And so you can take, get some commercially available glyphosate and or Roundup, and use a, using, cut the hollow stems off in early to midsummer, and using something like a dropper, like an eyedropper, literally drip Roundup or glyphosate into the hollow stems.
Hmm.
And that's so it's very precisely applied.
Yeah.
And then goes down into the root system, is taken up by the plant, goes down into the root system to kill things off.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also connects anything that's connected to it, it will also kill. And this is a very effective, somewhat tedious method,
mm-hmm,
but it can work.
Mm.
And then again, you follow up, you know, next year and year after, you're going to be watching, watching to see if any come back and repeat on any small sprigs. Perhaps they weren't attached, perhaps you didn't cut it off, or you just happened to miss a few. But that's one, another method of control to go after these plants. And then, because they've, if you've got an established patch and nothing has been growing there for some years, you may be surprised by what else sprouts later. There may be buttercups,
hmm,
pop up in there, or who knows what else that was growing in that area. You may see salmonberry seedlings,
mm-hmm,
popping up because the birds may very well have moved in there and, you know, lived in the Japanese knotweed patch,
hmm,
and they ate some salmonberries or blueberries or whatever else elsewhere, and then poop out the seeds,
mm-hmm,
and they're just waiting for their turn, time to see the sun, the light,
mm-hmm,
and pop up in there.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, those are really good suggestions around knotweed, and both do's and don't do's. Really important to remember that this is not something that you can just hack away at and think that good things are going to happen, especially not rototilling, because of how it,
right,
really responds to each new fragment in the soil becomes a new plant, I guess.
Yes. So here, one of the things that has happened, too, along the roadsides, and I know you've got it down there as you're heading out the road, because I've seen it even back when we used to live there and more recently. But along the highway, where there's highway projects, where they're rebuilding highways,
mm-hmm,
this some of these different invasive plants are specifically looked for in the early stages of highway design.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are found, they are marked, you know, between here and here, this material, this plant is, these invasive plants are.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new contractor, I mean, as part of their contract, if they're doing road widening, ditch clearing, whatever it happens to be, have to excavate the area down to a certain depth, you know, how deep this stuff usually grows, and then dispose of it, like, at a landfill or something like that, and usually cap it over so that it isn't going to grow and reinfect, as opposed to being, you know, just moved around. You think, oh, I'm going to get some free fill from this roadside project, and along with this free fill comes free new weeds,
yeah,
that you really, really don't want in your yard.
No.
So, again, that's, you know, something to think about, what you're getting,
mm-hmm,
and you know, if there's free fill, and where is it coming from, and what is it bringing with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. I really never thought of that before, but yeah, that's a good thing to keep an eye out for too. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the other things I mentioned, reed canary grass. Again, that's one of those that was often used in these highway revegetation mixtures. It works great as an erosion control plant because it has a really sturdy root system that spreads underground, just like some of these others, like Japanese knotweed. That stabilizes the roadside really well and hillsides and whatever. But again, they found that this one is invasive. It has really feathery seed heads, or flower heads at this point right now. Grows anywhere from 3 to 6 feet tall, quite vigorous. Grows in wet to dry soils, which pretty much covers it for Southeast Alaska. And that's one that I did find last year. I was asked about some growing in another location, a project I was working on, and it was pointed out to me, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing it everywhere. Mm. And it's all along the highways. Again, it is a very common thing, and because it has these, grass seeds are very small, they really easily move. They move in, with rain, they move with, if they're dry and they're just blown around by the wind, and they also move, and this is, again, in construction projects, that when construction equipment is being moved, like from one city to another or town or something like that, a lot of them have to be cleaned. A lot of the construction equipment, excavators, trucks, and other assorted machinery sometimes needs to be cleaned so that these invasive plants, seeds, bits and pieces of roots and that sort of thing aren't being transferred, from city to city with construction equipment.
Hmm. Right. Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so many of these roadside invasives are going to be on that equipment if it's not carefully prevented.
It is. And so, again, so it's worth our while to learn what does this stuff look like. Mm-hmm. If you go online, and you can certainly Google or Bing the names of these different plants. If you think, I wonder what this is, or, if you've got a general idea, or if somebody tells you what it is, and then you can go look it up online and see, what kind of control measures potentially might I use, and what else looks like this? Is this really what I think it is, mm-hmm. Or not? And then try to control it if you see it in your own yard, or if you see it, notice it sneaking up your street or down the street, if you're... And again, so if you're at the top of the hill, maybe you're a little safer from the things blowing around in the wind or getting washed by soil that come downhill, like seeds mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But you never know. And, dandelions and buttercups, again, are not natives to Alaska. Well, most of the common buttercup is not mm-hmm. that we see. And the dandelions, there's a native one, but there are mostly non-native dandelions that people are... mostly unhappy to see in the springtime when they're blooming.
Right.
Some of those blow around, and of course they blow around with the breeze quite easily sometimes. And then you start looking at what other invasives, except they're natives here, the cottonwoods. And again, the seeds can float on the breeze, at least on the dry days anyway, and I've got a couple that I did deliberately plant them in my yard, and they're okay where they are. Willows, again, you see the willow fluff from those pussy willows this spring, and they blow off on the breeze. Fireweed, there's another classic example. It is a native. And it, most all of these, alders, spruces, hemlocks, all of these can spread by seeds, blown by the wind, and all they need really is some bare ground to settle on. And nature will not let that bare ground stay bare for very long.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Huh. Well, gosh. It's a good thing to gain more knowledge about, especially new homeowners in the area or first-time homeowners or anything like that. It's a good thing you're doing for yourself, for your property, for your future, for your neighborhood. To learn about these plants that are going to be haunting your dreams for years to come.
Oh, boy, that's... Well, yeah, okay. you know, you may want to say you do. Well, that brings up a good point, though. Say, you know, if you have a new house, or if you've had some, you know, fresh excavation done in your yard or something like that, you know, you're thinking ahead to, I want to be gardening next year, but gee, how can I prevent a whole bunch of these things from seeding into my yard?
Yeah.
And maybe, at least for temporary purposes, cover up that ground where you want to garden next year or the year after with the black plastic, black fabric, or something like that, so that the seeds, which will blow in on the breeze, do not infest that new ground, you know, until you uncover it and start gardening or planting trees, shrubs, or a lawn, or whatever else you might want to grow on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that is a great tip. So those are a handful of really strong tips for homeowners. Is black fabric is your friend, you know, whether it's in active combat against knotweed or just preparing future beds or future areas for planting that's intentional. But then also heading over to the University Cooperative Extension webpage, or you could probably find it by Googling invasive plants of Southeast Alaska or something like that.
Yep, exactly. And that's essentially what you do. Or, again, you go to the Cooperative Extension Service website, and, yeah, you look. They've got a listing of pamphlets, or you just look at for invasive plants, and you'll get several choices. And they include control, and they even include for the, like I mentioned, for the construction trade and what to do about cleaning equipment and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an ongoing challenge here, since we normally have plenty of moisture. Plants don't lack for moisture, so if the seeds mature, then they will find at least a moist seed bed to settle down into and to sprout, and away they go.
Yeah, that's one more occasion to give a nod to that deadheading idea from a couple weeks ago. I've been seeing lots of wild celery, cow parsnips going to flower in many, many, many lawns around town. And, you know, if anybody's out there listening, if that's in your lawn, you know, put some gloves on and go chop that flower off before that thing goes to seed, because it's just the neighborly thing to do. You know?
Right. I know. And I've just, we were just planning for there's a coming garden tour in a couple of weeks here. Mm-hmm. So we did a pre-tour last weekend, and I and some of the other folks who were helping on the garden tour were out. And again, we were talking about that very subject, asked the folks, well, are you deliberately leaving these cow parsnips to seed themselves downhill into your gardens, along with, it is a native plant, but it's sometimes unpleasant for many. And another one is the goat's beard. And again, it too has small seeds which can easily blow around and be moved. So again, if you can deadhead those weeds, even if you're not digging out the weeds, not disposing of the weed plants themselves, these are the perennial weeds. Again, if you deadhead them, at least you're going to slow their spread, which, again, that's worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, speaking of garden tour, I was thinking about doing just about the same thing around here, too. In a few weeks, we haven't crisply decided on a date yet, but I'll put this out there to listeners. If you're interested in either participating with the garden tour this summer as a passenger on the bus or a host garden, shoot me a line here, give me a call at the station, or send me an email to orin@kfsk.org, because end of July, beginning of August, we're going to be doing our garden tour too. That's always a very fun way to see what the community is doing, you know.
It really is. I mean, sometimes you'll see some new plants in gardens, and of course you're marveling, and of course gardening can be a somewhat competitive sport also seeing old plants in new, you know, used in new ways and new arrangements, and just different landscaping ideas and different gardening ideas and tips that you can transplant to your own yard, to your own garden, is certainly worthwhile. And gardeners, again, are generally a pretty friendly bunch, at least Well, those folks who are willing to share. So you get to, you know, take your notebook, take your camera along to get new ideas. It's a great way to see and learn about some new stuff, maybe new crops, new edibles, and otherwise, I highly recommend participating in garden tours. And if your own garden is on the tour, we've had this discussion too, that you work really hard to make it look good, of course, for the tour. And especially if you can hopefully get some friends to help, perhaps, then that is helps make your garden look that much better, even for weeks or months after the garden tour.
That's
which
true.
Is a pretty nice thing if it doesn't cause you too much stress.
Yeah, it's a good excuse to optimize your situation there, and it's very fun. We've always had an incredibly good time doing the garden tour. It's fun for everybody, fun to host and fun to organize and fun to ride along with. And so that, just wanted to put the first word out in the community here that's coming up this summer. We're going to do it a little earlier than last year, but the season is a little later than last year too, so we'll hit a sweet spot
right,
there.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Folks can compare ideas, and this year versus last year versus the year before, and mm-hmm. and how they're changing their way of doing things, or finding how to see the new greenhouses and hoop houses and all of that have sprouted since the last one because of the weather and mm-hmm. us trying to push those not so hardy plants just a little faster, taller, farther.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the innovations and practices with greenhouses, both people who've been doing it for a long time and brand new households gardening in greenhouses around here. That is, I get excited about that. And so if you've made a new greenhouse this year, or you're really dialing yours in, let me know. Maybe we can swing by on the tour. But maybe that's a good note to leave it on. It's a positive note after the battlefield stories of invasives. But thank you for all the good advice around controlling invasives. Starts with knowledge, and then a commitment to just do that work. But it's well worth it, and there's certainly, there's no way to get around it. Ignoring invasives showing up at your house or on your street or in your garden, that's not a solution.
Right, exactly. I know. I mean, some people just say, build a higher fence. And, that's not necessarily the solution either. But we shouldn't get into politics other than outside of the garden, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but, that hard work, we make it all. It all is what it is.
Yep. Okay.
Cool. Well, on that note, Ed, we'll free you up. I know you've got a load of gravel to unload over there, and so we'll let you get to it. We really do appreciate your time every week. We're looking forward to talking to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. Probably we'll be getting close to garlic harvesting, or we'll talk about when it's ready, and among other things, and potatoes, and flowering, and who knows what all else, and keep planting. I've got more stuff to plant.
All right. That sounds fabulous. Okay, cool. Well, until then, Ed, thanks so much.
Okay, you're welcome, Warren.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that's another episode of In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. We really appreciate him taking the time in Juneau to give us all the wisdom. And thank you to the Flower Farm. They help support this program, and you can go visit their greenhouses and enjoy their flowers down there at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. They've got dahlias galore, beautiful, colorful, bright flowers, and subscriptions available for yourself or special gift, and annuals, perennials, trees, shrubs, dirt, mulching, bark, all at the Flower Farm. They're open every day but Wednesday, 772-3464. Up next is High Country.
But it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat
them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy.